Good morning. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Sunday morning here at Essex Church, here where Kensington Unitarians are gathering, here with one another, welcoming one and all to this community of the Spirit. Now, our seasonal wall hangings behind us tell us what our bodies already know. The season of autumn is upon us, with shorter days, longer nights, darker nights, leaves changing colour and starting to fall from trees. Autumn fruits are plenty to eat or to collect, and we have some examples of those autumn fruits for you later. The temperature and the weather are changing so often we don't know if we're too hot or too cold or just right. And it won't just be our temperature that's uncertain, will it? Life itself has such uncertainty built into it, and we are such changeable creatures. How shall we live with our uncertainties? Well, one way is to inhabit the moment that is here, and the next moment, and the next moment. One way is to follow our breathing, that gentle rhythm of inhaling and exhaling that accompanies our journey of life, that makes life possible for us. The air that we breathe and that we share with all living beings on this miraculous planet Earth, where life is possible just because of a balance of chemical elements. What a remarkable, fertile creativity has brought us to this time and this place. And this simple flame, this simple chalice flame, connects us to progressive communities the world over. It connects us to the flame within each of us, the flame that yearns for justice, for truth, for a resilient sense of hope for our world. I welcome you all this day. Oh, right, what have we got next? A question. Have you ever been very cold?
Yes.
Oh, there's quite a few. Giuliano, you have been cold.
Yes, I came in England.
Yeah, when you came to England? Our lovely warm and sunny land. Is it warmer in Italy?
Yes.
Has anybody else? Tyler, have you been cold? Did you like being cold? Were you cold when you jumped in the water in Wales? There's a story to be told there, that is for sure. There are lots of stories about people who are cold. I'm no stranger to chilliness myself. And Brian and I have been talking this week about the olden days when we were young and chilblains. This will split the group up. Who remembers chilblains? Yes. Oh, there's a lot of you who don't understand how hideous these things were. They would arrive on fingers and toes when you were very cold, and they would be very itchy, and then my mum would always say, don't itch them, it'll only make it worse, and of course all you want to do is scratch. I'm very grateful that chilblains don't seem to happen quite as much as they used to. And I've been cold as an adult, as I'm sure some of you have. I have tried to sleep outside without a sleeping bag or a tent, and that is a mistake in quite a few places in our world. I had to stay awake to make sure I didn't freeze. And I know, or I suspect, that some of you will have the experience of not switching a heater on at home because you fear the fuel bill will be too high. And I know that some of you give warm clothes to people that really need them. And that's the message of today's reading. It's about coats, it's about socks, and it's about sharing what we have.
Once upon a time,
A thief snuck into the room of a sleeping Buddhist monk. As the burglar rummaged about, the monk awoke. The startled thief ran into the snowy streets with the monk racing after him. "Please stop," the monk called, and the man finally did, realizing that his pursuer was no threat. "You'll need this," the monk gasped, handing the thief his own coat. "What do you mean?" the man asked. "I saw that you dashed from my room into the cold without so much as a winter wrap, and I realized that I had both a woolen blanket and a coat." Having heard this implausible tale of sainthood years ago, I forgot the details, but I remembered the essential events. Ordinary people can't be morally compelled to make such extraordinary sacrifices, but, for whatever reason, perhaps the sheer absurdity of such unconditional altruism, this parable stuck with me. It rattled around in my skeptical mind until the day my wife, Nan, played the role of the Buddhist monk. Nan and I headed into the mountains for a day of skiing with our children, who were 4 and 6 at the time. In the chaos of packing up that morning, we'd forgotten our daughter's mittens. The wind was biting and mercury hovered in the teens, so no mittens meant no skiing. But for Nan, the solution was as obvious as it was simple. She always wore 2 pairs of socks, so she removed the outer layer and pulled them over Erin's hands. The problem solved. We headed down the trail. I found her approach rather clever, the sort of practical, motherly thinking that often eludes my analytical mind, but hardly heroic. However, the bitter cold and the woolen warmth evoked the parable of the monk's coat. Among the snow-hushed pines, I remembered how the dialogue ended. "I don't understand," the man said. "It's simple. You have nothing at all to keep you warm," the monk answered. "But you're a fool to give away your coat, leaving you with only a blanket," the man replied, reaching for the garment. If I had 2 gloves on one hand and none on the other, would I be a fool to put one of them in my bare hand? The monk asked. The man said nothing, took the coat, and hurried down the street. When we are not alienated, when love draws us into the suffering of others, when we see our happiness entwined in their well-being, then generosity is neither foolish nor heroic. It is simply the simplest and most obvious choice.
Thank you, Harold. And I would share my socks with you. And I think our young people are going down for their program now, and we're going to join in a time of prayer and reflection. So let's rest a while. Let's align ourselves with all that we hold to be of ultimate worth, that unknown dimension of life and love, within which our little lives are enacted. The story of a monk running after a thief to give them a coat may make us smile with its absurd generosity. And perhaps it also reminds us of the absurdity of possession itself in our world, where a few have so much and many have so very little. And so I invite you, if you wish, to feel an inner gratitude for that which you possess in life. Absurd though that may be, Still, let us be people of gratitude for what we have. Both possessions we could buy and all that is priceless. Our inner nature, our skills, our friendships, the chance nature of our birth. And let's feel gratitude for all who share with us in so many ways. Material wealth, time, insights, practicalities, our own experiences, our strengths and our vulnerabilities. Knowing that sharing is one of the ways that our human world works. Knowing sharing is the way of nature that gives so much, such abundance. And knowing that only human foolishness would try to control freely given resources of water and air and space and nature's bounty. And when we feel a meanness upon us, as it is so human to do, when we want to withhold or only look after ourselves or our little group, may we find that monk's path through to a new level of giving, a greater generosity, an understanding that when we care for another, in truth, we care for ourselves. When we share with others, we give to ourselves, and this is the great cycle that is life, of giving and receiving, in a never-failing circle of generosity for one and for all this day. Amen.
This is such a short poem and such an interesting perspective on life that I'm going to read it through twice. It is a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea, how the chair stands sturdy and foursquare, how the floor receives the bottoms of shoes or toes, how soles of feet know where they're supposed to be. I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things, how clothes wait respectfully in closets, and soap dries quietly in the dish, and towels drink the wet from the skin of your back, and the lovely repetition of stairs. And what is more generous than a window? It is a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea, how the chair stands sturdy and foursquare, how the floor receives the bottoms of shoes or toes, how soles of feet know where they're supposed to be. I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things, how clothes wait respectfully in closets, and soap dries quietly in the dish, and towels drink the wet from the skin of the back, and the lovely repetition of stairs. And what is more generous than a window?
Thank you.
And our gratitude for that music can lead us beautifully into our time of meditation. There's going to be a short spoken meditation, so I invite you to just do whatever works for you to settle yourself. Some of us like to hold on to things, some of us prefer to let go and put things down. Perhaps it works for you to really feel yourself resting in the chair, that generosity of a chair that holds us and connects us to the earth. And I'm inviting you in this time of meditation, if you wish, to think grateful thoughts, to think of gratitude for gifts, small and large. And those might be the very obvious gifts that we all share. Or they might be the odd kinds of gifts that are very personal to you. Perhaps particularly at this time of year, are you somebody whose heart is lifted by the autumn colours or by the exuberance of acorns on the ground beneath an oak tree? Your gratitude may be for some very personal issues that are perhaps significant for you at the moment. Or it may be that it is hard to find gratitude right now for gifts, small or large. So in these moments of shared stillness now, I invite you to think the thoughts that will be most useful to you about life's gifts, both small and large. And our silence will come to an end with a chime from our bell. The Buddha apparently named generosity as the first of the 10 perfected qualities of an enlightened mind. And when I should have been writing the rest of this sermon, I then spent my time thinking, well, I wonder what the other 9 are. So we could play that game later. And St. Augustine advised his followers to discover what being generous means and then begin living it. Generosity towards others is a unique, universal principle for humanity. And that's hardly surprising, is it, for social beings like us? Altruism, caring for others, it's a way to survive and prosper. We human beings, we really need one another, don't we? But our generous urges are shaped by our upbringing and by our social setting. And in the face of the seemingly overwhelming needs of the whole of humanity, well, we can start to shut down. We limit our awareness. We draw circles around those that we include in our awareness and those we exclude. And then when we explore this whole concept of generosity a little more deeply, all sorts of interesting issues emerge. So I wonder what thoughts you're already having about this theme that we're going to be following for this next month. I blessed a baby last weekend, the sweetest of babies, a precious child, long awaited and born into a loving circle of family and friends. And whenever I take part in such a ceremony, I unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, am always aware in the back of my mind of all the other babies being born into our world. Some born into circumstances so far from ideal. Some of them loved, but in places where there are not enough resources to go round. Some born into hatred. Some born with problems that their society cannot deal with. And we could go on and on and on, couldn't we? There is something about life's sometimes unstoppable generative qualities that can overwhelm me at times. I want all life to be precious, and that yet there's just too much of it at times to care for everything, or so it seems to me. On the front of this month's newsletter, I've written about nature's abundance at this time of year. Too many tomatoes and apples to pick, so many that they end up rotting on the ground and then I feel guilty about them. So many conkers and acorns, and can I just alert you now that Tyler and possibly the other children too are going to be giving you a conker at the end of this service, and if you could just look grateful and do something useful with it. All those conkers, all those acorns, and how few of those will grow into mature trees. We experience extremes of abundance and scarcity in life as a whole and in our individual private lives. These are themes really worthy of quite a lot of exploration for many of us, I think, scarcity and abundance. I reckon that many of us have complexities about excesses and shortages, about greed and desire, about consumption in all its forms. Our little quirks may go back to our early experiences when our life attitudes often get shaped. As a little example that I can suggest, just don't try sharing a bag of chips with me. That's all I'm going to do. Just don't. I grew up in a family of five children and a dog. Competition for chips was fierce. I don't share them. Generosity is not just about giving or receiving of chips or other material things, though, is it? There is a generosity in listening, as you are listening to me at this moment. There's generosity in making time to be with another. We can be really generous with our presence, can't we? Just our presence. We can be generous by recognising another human being as another human being. And even as I wrote that, I started to clock up all the people that I do not actually recognise as another human being. I can well and truly walk past a lot of people and ignore them. We can be generous in our patience towards those we find difficult. And if that's a skill that you want to practice, can I recommend church life to you? Because it gives you ample opportunities for that kind of generosity of patience. We can give one another the benefit of the doubt, or even hold back our judgments occasionally, or at least keep them to ourselves. And as our chant reminded us, as we sang, "From you I receive, to you I give, together we share, and by this we live." Generosity requires both givers and receivers. And life may orient us more towards one or the other, but we would do well to practice both giving and receiving during the journeys of our lives. For life itself will no doubt present us with opportunities, and we might as well get used to that. It can never be just one way. And we might as well face up to it, to the reality that generosity sounds like a very good thing, and sometimes it isn't. The best of intentions can go horribly wrong. There's a page in the newsletter about generosity, and I just was so taken by this author, Linda Harper, who was exploring the idea of the way that we give, but actually we're really expecting something in return. I am guilty of that. She calls it outcome-based giving. And she says that in all of us there are traders, there are martyrs, and there are controllers. And I don't know if any of these ring a bell with you. So traders are the ones, the bit of you that's giving, the bit of me that's giving, but really I'm expecting something back, and I'm keeping a tally. The martyrs, that's the bit of me that is ignoring my own personal needs in order to please everybody else. But then, when my sacrifices aren't actually noticed, well, then I get really fed up, but I don't tell any of you about it. And then, of course, there's the controller, our inner controller. That's the bit of me that gives, but wants certain results in return, and then feels terrible when the whole world doesn't change because I've given something. So she recommends spend some time exploring our own inner trader, martyr, and controller, and just asking ourselves, are we involved in some outcome-based giving in life that perhaps it's time to draw to a close? And then even when we do give without strings, well, it may not be for the best. Sometimes asking the question, how may I help, may allow someone to reveal needs that we could not have imagined. It could be an opportunity for us to put our assumptions on one side. And I don't know about you, but I still hope that we could live in a world where we're actually encouraging one another to ask for help, encouraging one another to voice our needs, and not waiting for someone to magically read our minds and guess what we need most. And let's explore this month the connections between generosity and gratitude. It seems to me that thankfulness is connecting giving and receiving, receiving and giving. The more we notice and the more we express our gratitude for all that is, the more abundance and generosity flows. On our hymn sheet today, yes, it is there, there's a space. And what I was going to suggest that we use that space to jot down some gifts of life for which you are grateful. I meant to put some pens on the table, but in a setup like this, there are going to be people who lend you a pen, of that I am sure. And maybe we can be thinking about the gifts of life, both large and small, for which we feel grateful for this day, as we take the collection for the work of this community. And let me say thank you in advance for all your support of Kensington Unitarians, and that doesn't have to mean financial. Thank you. Within each of our hearts is a most glorious light. Go forth and let its spark help you understand what troubles both you and others. Go forth and let its light of reason be a guide in your decisions. Go forth and bring its ray of hope to those in need of help in both body and spirit, that they may find healing. Go forth and fan the flames of passion to help heal our world. Go forth and spread the warm glow of love, pushing back the coldness of the world. Go forth and share your glorious light. Amen. Go well and blessed be.